Dan Walters has been a journalist for nearly 60 years, spending all but a few of those years working for California newspapers. At one point in his career at age 22, he was the nation's youngest daily newspaper editor. After three newspaper editor positions, he joined the Sacramento Union's Capital Bureau in 1975. In 81, he began writing the state's only daily newspaper column devoted to California political, economic, and social events. In 1984, he moved to the Sacramento Bee, written more than 10,000 columns. Midway 2017, he left the Bee and went online to Cal Matters, calmatters.org. In 1986, his book, The New California, Facing the 21st Century, was published. He also the founding editor of the California Political Almanac, co-author of a book, Lobbying, titled The Third House, Lobbyists, Money, and Power in Sacramento, contributed to two other books, Remaking California and New Political Geography California. And he's very gracious to come on and talk to me three, four times a year. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Dan Walters.
Thank you.
Invited you on. You wrote a couple of recent articles on water. And coincidentally, I interviewed Mike Wade, California Farm Water Coalition Director. Do you know him?
That's hello?
Do you know Mike Wade, California Farm?
No, I don't know him.
He wrote in a piece to comment on Jim Newton's article. He wrote a tongue-in-cheek article about turning the spigot off in the Imperial Valley. But anyway, we're not going to rehash that. We'll talk about your article.
I spent part of my childhood in the Imperial Valley. I went to elementary and junior high school in El Centro.
And it's the Imperial Valley. And where the heck is that?
Down in the southeastern corner of California, Imperial County, the last county formed in California, as a matter of fact, when it broke away from San Diego in 1907. It was the 58th county created in California.
Wow, the last.
And it's a place unlike any other place in California. It's mostly below sea level. It's a very hot desert. But it grows a lot of crops because they can grow crops there 365 days a year. They don't have an off season there at all.
Do they have any?
And they are the OPEC of water. The Imperial Irrigation District is legally entitled to 3/4 of the Colorado River water that comes into California. This one irrigation district is entitled to 3/4 of it.
Well, and that's another article. You wrote two articles, and I want to get into that, but I kind of started into the topic, but I first wanted to say that Dan was on last February 6, 2023, and he reminded me that February 1st, 2023, his mom turned 107, and we've always talked about his mom. She's a remarkable woman living on her own, and before the program began, as I always do, I asked Dan, how's his mom? And I got some news I wasn't prepared for, and he said he's willing to share that news with us now. So what happened?
Yeah, well, on 1 month after her 107th birthday, she had a stroke and died the next day, never regained consciousness, and died the next day. She kind of went out, you know, she went out the way she wanted to go out, which was, you know, not lingering, no nursing homes or any of that kind of stuff, just die. That's what she did. So I'm very grateful that she had that kind of a peaceful passing and everybody in the family. She lived long enough just for the family to gather and tell her goodbye.
Oh, for the 107th birthday.
Well, no, for the day after she had the stroke, she was still alive 24 hours later and everybody gave around and she died.
Oh, so she was, because a really dear friend who was 80 years old got a stroke, and she lingered for a few days, and I was under the impression she might not have been conscious. So your mom was able to, oh, okay.
Well, she wasn't conscious, but she was there. She was still alive.
And, right.
Just enough time for the family to gather and be with her when she died.
And I'm telling you, they say over and over again that people are aware of what's going on, and you had... Of course, you saw her at least every week, and you had just seen her a few days prior.
Yeah.
And she was living alone on her own.
Living out and doing just fine, and then bingo.
Well, sorry for your loss, and just you got to be, it's got to be tough no matter what. I don't think we're ever prepared to lose our moms, but no. Man, what a run.
What a run. She survived 2 world wars and 2 pandemics.
That's right. That's right. And that's impressive. And she, I think at one time I asked you how she compared, you know, in terms of the oldest woman in California, or did you have some info on that?
Yeah, she wasn't the oldest. There was a woman in Oakland who was like 114 or something like that.
Jeez. You don't know anything about her.
No.
I bet her son is not a syndicated columnist.
Probably not.
Well, God bless. What was her first name?
Glenna.
Oh, that's right. You told me that because of Glenna and Glenn and the Glenn County and some history like that.
Yeah, the family, her relatives, one of her cousins, and therefore one of my cousins, is Hugh Glenn, for whom Glenn County is named, in, of Northern California. He was a huge farmer back in the 19th century and a 49er, by the way, as well.
I wonder, you said that the Imperial County was the 58th county in 1907. I wonder when Hugh County was incorporated. I wonder which.
It was about, I think it was 1891.
Oh. Wow. Wow. What an interesting background for you to have in terms of California history, and then you end up in a job that's basically writing about California. I think your mom must have been really, really proud of you. Did she?
When my column was actually printed in the newspaper in the Sacramento Bee, and she was a scriber, she used to clip them all out in an envelope or something.
That's only a mom would do that.
Only a mom, right?
And she must have been incredibly, incredible.
Well, she had scrapbooks. She loved scrapbooks, and she had a number of them that go back to, 70, 80 years, she had a lot of memorabilia anyway, but she liked that sort of thing.
Well, and then she was sharp as a tack, right? She used to play games, and she was...
Yeah, she was fine. I saw her 3 days before she had her stroke, and we played 4 or 5 games of Upwards, her favorite game. It was like three-dimensional Scrabble, and I think she won one of the games, actually.
I can't even play one-dimensional Scrabble, so that's she's 3 times behind me. My guest, Dan Walters. So we're saying goodbye to his lovely mom, Glenna, who passed away March 1st, 1 month after turning 107. And that's a great run. So did she ever read your columns and say, why didn't you say this? Or
no, she didn't. She never asked me about what I wrote about. She was apolitical. She didn't have a political bone in her body. She didn't care about politics at all. Zero.
That's probably why she lived so long. That's
exactly right. She was oblivious to all of that.
That's what's
probably
killing.
Why she lived that long.
Exactly. That's what's killing the rest of us. Okay, so your background, growing up in the Imperial Valley and last county incorporated, 58th county in California in 1907. And so it's a big, I think you wrote this one article, California's lengthy battle for water rights moves into the legislature. And pardon the pun, but 2023 could be a watershed year, not only for its immense amounts of rainfall and snow, but for the 173-year war for control over California's water supply. Why is that the summary of what you wrote?
Well, it literally has been going on for 173 years. The first battles over water occurred in the 1850s, pitting farmers against miners, gold miners, who were using hydraulic mining to wash sediment or wash dirt down into the rivers so that the gold could be extracted. And, of course, it clogged up the rivers and made it more difficult for the farmers to get water for their crops. So the earliest water battles in California were between miners and farmers. And that battle has been going on, and essentially the same battle ever since, over who has the rights to water in California, to use water in California, and how the water supply is divvied up among various interest groups. No more miners, but farmers is the big one, and municipalities and nature all have need for water. And there's only so much of it going around. I mean, on a year like this, there's a lot of it. In other years, there's not very much of it. But however much there is on any given point in time, there's not enough of it to satisfy all demands. And so the battle over water has been going on for 173 years, sometimes in the legislature, sometimes in the courts, sometimes on the ground with guns and dynamite and things like that. And it's still, and that's still going on. I mean, there's still battles going on down in the Tulare Lake Basin. As the water comes out of the snowpack and into recreating Tulare Lake, which at one time was the largest lake west of the Mississippi River, largest freshwater lake west of the Mississippi River. They're still fighting over whose land will be flooded and whose land won't be flooded.
What's the name of the lake?
Same battle.
What's the name of the lake?
Tulare Lake, T-U-L-A-R-E, Lake, between Fresno and Bakersfield, was once the largest freshwater lake west of the Mississippi River. It was a 1,000-square-mile lake, and it dried up in the 20th century as the rivers feeding it were dammed. It dried up and became farmland, mostly growing cotton. Huge farmers, I mean, big, large-scale farmers. But periodically, every few decades, there's so much snow in the southern Sierra that the rivers feeding into Tulare Lake cannot be controlled by the dams on those rivers, and the lake is recreated. I actually lived down there, and I was the editor of the paper in Hanford, right there, back in 1968 and 69 when Tulare Lake was recreated. It happened again in 83, and it's happening again now in 2023. And the lake is already huge so far. Water as far as the eye can see. But it's going to get bigger because there's still a tremendous amount of snow, as much as 400% of normal snow in the lower, what they call the Southern Sierra. And it's coming down faster or slower, depending on how hot it gets. And there's the town of Corcoran is almost all surrounded by water right now. And they're building up levees to try to save the town from going under. It's a town of about 20,000 people, something like that.
Well, my next question was going to be, what is it covering? What, you know, is it covering the old the farmland? And now you're telling me it's covering
it's farmland now, yes. But there are several towns on the periphery of the lake that are threatened, Corcoran being one of them. There's also state prison in Corcoran. Corcoran's one, and Stratford is another town that could be threatened. This lake was so big at one time that you could go by boat from Bakersfield to San Francisco. And in fact, in 1983, the last time it flooded, a couple of guys actually kayaked from downtown Fresno on the Tule River all the way to San Francisco Bay.
Oh, that's nuts. About how many miles is that?
Well, it's a lot of miles. It's about probably 400 miles close to it.
Oh, my God.
Because what they did is they went down the Tule River, they went across Tulare Lake through a thing called the Fresno Slough, which is a kind of a natural outlet of Tulare Lake that flows into the San Joaquin River, and then from the San Joaquin River, you go down through the delta in San Francisco Bay. This thing is huge. I mean, it's not as huge as it has been. Like I say, at one time, it was 1,000 square miles and was probably close to 100 miles long. It's a lake. It's a big lake. And They had paddle wheel steamers on that lake back at the turn of the last century.
And you said
during World War II, the Navy had a station at Tulare Lake to be used as an auxiliary landing area for its seaplanes. If it was too foggy to land in San Francisco Bay, they would fly over to Tulare Lake and land at Tulare Lake. That's how big it was. It was huge.
Tell me again, how many square miles?
In its natural state, it was 1,000 square miles.
Jeez.
It was the largest lake west of the Mississippi River, freshwater lake, west of the ninth largest lake in the United States.
So that means that there were eight larger lakes east of the Mississippi?
Yes.
Jeez, who knew that? My guest is Dan Walters, syndicated columnist for nearly 60 years. I keep reading that nearly 60 years. When is it going to be 60?
Well, it's over 60 years now. No, it's 63 years now.
Well, I'll have to change the document to say over 60 years instead of for nearly. Thank you for that. And he was with the Sacramento Bee for a very long time, 1984, and then 2017 he moved over to Cal Matters, which I get daily emails from them. And includes his column and others. And you can just, if you Google calmatters.org or Cal Matters and Dan Walters, you'd be able to read everything he writes. And his recent column was about water. And that's how we started to get a little history that was not in the column at all. But we got some bonus time talking with Dan Walters. You mentioned that the Battle of Water goes back to 1850 and the farmers versus the miners, and it's in the courts, the legislature, and sometimes guns and bombs. Now, AB 1337, you wrote about, what are they trying to do with that?
Well, the battle that's been waged, I mean, they fight over water. We also fight over the water rights, which are the key element in all water distribution and allocation, is water rights. Very complicated thing, mostly affected by who got there first. The reason the Imperial Irrigation District has rights to about three-fourths of all the Colorado River water flowing into California is that they were the first to actually tap the Colorado River for agriculture back in the turn of the last century. So they were there first, so they got the senior right to use that water. And that's true up and down the state. And the state started regulating water rights in 1914, 2 years before my mother was born, by the way. But there's rights that existed before 1914 and rights that existed after 1914, and they have a different category. And generally speaking, the pre-1914 rights have not been regulated by the state to any great extent. There's a theory of the pre-1914 rights is they are there first, they can use all the water they want to use. People have those rights. This legislation, however, would change that. It would say that the State Water Resources Control Board could regulate and decrease water taken by pre-1914 rights holders during an emergency period like a drought. This has been a legal question mark for years, and they've almost come to, you know, they've came real close to testing all this in court as to these pre-1914 rights, but it's a legally clouded. But this legislation, if it were to be enacted, would say, yes, there is this right. You can abrogate pre-1914 rights. You can tell people with those rights that they can only take so much water during an emergency period. It would be the mother of all battles were this to occur, because these pre-1914 rights are immense. It's the largest. They're almost all agricultural rights, not all of them. Most of them are agricultural rights, which means it's farmers that would be the mostly affected by any legislation like this. But it's been kicking around for a long time. Some people think that those rights can already be abrogated. Some people say they can't. This legislation would settle it and say, yes, they can, if in fact it's passed. But it's not a sure thing it's going to pass, because obviously the people who held those pre-1914 rights, will fight it tooth and nail in the legislature.
And if it's passed, can they sue? Or once it's passed, it's passed?
Conceivably, they could sue, but we're getting into a real gray area. The state constitution, it has a funny, quirky way of looking at that. The state constitution says that water is not, you cannot own water. You can own the rights to use water, but water belongs to the public. And water is to be used for beneficial purposes, reasonable beneficial purposes. Those are all weasel words that lawyers like, right? You find all of those things. What's a beneficial purpose? What's a reasonable purpose? All these things. So the answer to the question is, if you pass this legislation, are you abrogating rights that are guaranteed in the Constitution or not? In which case, it would take a constitutional amendment to abrogate those rights. And this is all. But I'm sure if it were to pass, it would be tested. The allegation would be that it is taking something from people without compensation, and it is also violating the state constitution. That would be the allegation, whether it would stand up or not.
The taking could be the Fourth Amendment of the federal constitution. Dan Walters, syndicated columnist, we're up against a commercial break. I'd like to keep you on for about another 10 minutes, if you have time, just so we can wrap this up. And you said the water rights pre-1914, and you said your mom was born 1916. My dad was born 1914 and made it to 1998, age 84. So
he did pretty well.
Your mom beat him. My mom made it to age 2.5 months shy of 95. So your mom went 12 years plus after that. So you win hands down. Dan Walters is my guest. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Stay tuned. Go get a glass of water. You'll be right back.